The following program is brought to you by Bob Rovner. It's time again for Senator Bob Rovner Talks to the Stars here on WWDB AM 860. Join Bob Rovner as he talks to interesting and exciting guests and keeps you up to date on news and political events nationally as well as right here in Philadelphia. And now here's Senator Bob Rovner.
Good afternoon. This is Bob Rovner, and I'm pleased to host my radio show every Friday from 12 to 1 on WWDB 860 AM. This program can also be heard live by dialing 712-432-2862, as well as our station's website, wwdbam.com. All of our shows are archived, and you can access the website to listen to them. Our shows are also rebroadcast on 860 AM, Mondays 12 o'clock, Tuesdays 1 o'clock, Wednesdays 6 o'clock, Thursdays 3 o'clock. And every Sunday, you hear our show on 610 WTEL. I'd like to thank my two sponsors, Ron Schwartz, Colonial Nissan. As you know, if you can't make a deal with Ron Schwartz, you can't make a deal with anyone. Colonial Nissan is Pennsylvania's number one volume dealer. Give Ron a call at 215-364-1100. And Walt Schwenk, give Walt Schwenk a call at 856-988-2522. And I want to mention our law firm, Rovner Allen, Rovner, Zimmerman, and Nash. So give us a call at 888-DIAL-LAW. So we're going to hear in 1 second from Sally Quinn, and I loved her book. She wrote a new book, and it's called Finding Magic, a spiritual memoir by Sally Quinn. And I think Sally Quinn is a beautiful lady. She was very beautiful when she was younger. She married Ben Bradley. It's the story of them. And Ben Bradley was the amazing editor, charismatic, enthusiastic, energetic editor of the Washington Post. And the Washington Post, we read every day what's going on. We just have a new story from the Washington Post. They broke the story about Roy Moore down in Alabama, the Republican candidate for Senate. Maybe we'll get a Democrat now. And the next half hour after Sally Quinn, we're going to have the state Democratic chairman, Marcel Groen, to talk about the victories that the Democrat Party had here in Pennsylvania, in Virginia, and in New Jersey. Let me get to Sally Quinn now, because I love Charlie Rose. I watch his show every night. I tape it and then watch it the next day. On October 24th, she was on, and I saw they have a great friendship. They talked about her book, Finding Magic, Sally Quinn. And the book is an emotional, inviting, illuminating memoir. Sally Quinn's a journalist, a television commentator, and a longtime Washington insider, and talks about she went to 22 schools because her dad was in the Army. He was a general, and it talked about she had a short tenure as the first female network anchor on CBS Morning News. It talks about she did fall in love with the Post executive editor Ben Bradley, caring for her learning disabled son, her keeping vigil during her beloved husband's illness and death. And yes, he had dementia, but talks about how she slept with him every night, how she just cared for him, and you could feel the love that Sally Quinn had for Ben Bradley. Sally Quinn, I'm honored that you're on our show, and I want you to tell us about our book, and then I'm going to ask you some questions. Take it away, Sally Quinn.
Well, thank you so much. That was quite an introduction. You know more about me than I've forgotten.
Well, you deserve a good introduction. And Charlie Rose, I wish I could have been a fly on the wall of some of your parties. You and Ben Bradley had a lot of great parties, and Kay Graham had a lot of great parties. So I'll ask you about them, but first tell us about your book.
Well, it's called Finding Magic, a Spiritual Memoir, and it started out, I had started a religion website for the Washington Post 11 years ago called On Faith, and I was an atheist at the time, and I sort of backed into it because I went to the editor and said, I really think we need to cover religion because it's so important in terms of American politics and foreign policy. And so I started this website, and it took off immediately, and I got very involved in studying about religion, learning about religion, and took a trip around the world to to study the great faiths, went to 13 different countries. It was a real eye-opener for me. And so I got a book contract to write about how an atheist had started a religion website, and I signed the contract a few years before Ben died, and at that point he began his decline. He had Alzheimer's or dementia for 8 years before he died, and so I really couldn't focus on writing a book. I just had nothing to write, and I was spending all of my time. I was Quinn's and Ben's caregiver, and for those 2 years before he died. And so after he died, I hadn't written a word. I just realized about 2 weeks later that I had to write it, and so I started writing about his decline and his death. And when I got finished with that, I realized that I didn't want to write a book about starting a website. I mean, I do write about that in the book, but what I really wanted to do was to write about how my sort of spiritual journey, if you will, and how I had gotten from going to being an atheist in the beginning to ending up being a really truly spiritual person. And I certainly no longer call myself an atheist. And I think probably taking care of Ben those last 2 years was the most spiritual experience I've ever had. And we were together 43 years, but I think the last 2 years, oddly, were the happiest years of our marriage. We were closer then because, you know, Ben was such a macho, tough guy, you know, and he didn't like to be dependent on anybody or anything. And up until then, you know, it would be 40 below, and I'd say, Ben, I think you need a coat. Don't tell me what to do. And the last 2 years, he kind of said, you know, he let go and let me love him and take care of him the way he needed to be taken care of. And that was such a gift to me because I was able to really to take care of him in a way he needed to be taken care of.
Right, and you say even though he had dementia, he never forgot you.
I was so lucky because so often people will forget the people that they love, and Ben never forgot for a second who I was or who Quinn, my son, was, or the people closest around him. So that was fantastic. I mean, up until, you know, he closed his eyes. I was in the bed with him when he died, and I stayed in bed with him for 3 days and just held on to him. And
I like when you said, you don't die in our wedding. October 20th was your wedding anniversary. So.
Well, he sort of drifted off. And the last thing I said to him was, I love you, Ben. And he said, me too, babe. And then he closed his eyes, and then he sort of lost consciousness. But, you know, I held his hand for those 3 days after he had sort of lost consciousness or seemed to be unresponsive. And I would go to the bathroom, and I'd say, Ben, I'm going to the bathroom, so don't die while I'm gone. And I would let go of his hand, and he kept moving his hand back and forth until I came back to the bed. So I knew that he knew I was there. And I said to him, you know, our wedding anniversary was October 20th, and I said, you can't die on our anniversary. And he didn't. He waited until the next day, and then he died on October 21st.
Well, you have a great love story. And tell us about Ben, because Ben wrote a book. Ben was friendly with the President Kennedy, and he wrote a book about President Kennedy. And I want to know about that book, and I want to know about, isn't there a movie that's going to come out that two biggest stars, Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep, they are going to be in the movie. Tell us about that movie. Go ahead.
This is the year of Ben, I have to say, because, you know, in my book, I write a lot about Ben. I write about our love story and how we first got together and how, you know, how he hired me and when we fell in love and all of that. Night before last was the premiere of the HBO documentary, The Newspaper Man, about Ben, which is absolutely fabulous. And there's a lot of stuff about the Kennedys in there, but it's a fantastic. It's about the Pentagon Papers, and it's about Watergate, and it's about Ben's early life and his love affairs and our love of. I mean, it's just it's a beautiful, beautiful film.
Right, and Ben was married three times. And this was your first marriage, only marriage.
My first, yes.
And I liked in your book when you said you threatened them a couple times. You would have at first you didn't want to have a child, then you wanted to have a child. You said you had somebody in mind. So
well, he was stubborn, you know.
Came around.
He said he didn't want to get married because he'd been married twice, and he said, I'm not good at it. And he said, I don't want to be a three-time loser. And so I finally had to give him an ultimatum. I finally just said, okay, fine, then I'll just start having affairs. And that sort of focused his mind. and then he didn't want to have any more children. He was 60 years old, and he'd had three kids who were all grown. And I had never had a baby. I'd never been married. And so I finally he said he just refused to have a baby. I said, okay, fine, then I'll have a baby. And I have a father in mind. So. also focused his mind. And by the way, he was the happiest married man you've ever seen, and he was the most wonderful father to our son you've ever seen. So, I mean, the joy that I think Quinn and I brought him was well worth all of the...
Right. How's Quinn doing? You're right about how Quinn had a girlfriend. He had a short marriage, and it broke up, and now Quinn, I think, is engaged to someone.
Yes, Quinn was born with a hole in his heart and had open heart surgery as a child, and then had many, many physical problems and had many surgeries and was severely learning disabled as a child. And we were told he would never go to high school, never have a job, never have a relationship. And I just, you know, I didn't believe it, neither did Ben. And Quinn is a walking miracle. I mean, he's got a fantastic job as... he has his own website for young adults with learning disabilities called friendsofquinn.com, and he's engaged to this beautiful young woman who we adore, and he is the co-producer of the documentary on Ben, the newspaper man. It was his idea, and he took it to Richard Plepler, who's head of HBO, and Plepler said it was the fastest yes he ever said. So he's doing fantastic.
So Sally, will this movie be?
You asked me about the movie. So
is it going to be out in December on HBO?
It's coming out. No, that's the HBO documentary, which will air on the 4th of December, and then there's the Tom Hanks movie. Spielberg has directed this movie about the Pentagon Papers with Tom Hanks starring Ben and Meryl Streep starring Catherine Graham, and I think that will be released on the 22nd of December. And then Ben's book, A Good Life, has also been reissued, and with a foreword by Woodward and Bernstein and an afterword by me. So there's a lot of Ben this fall.
Great, and I am a fan of Woodward. I love all the King's Men with
all the President's Men.
The President's Men, not the King.
Yeah.
But I loved it, and I liked learning that you are so close to Bob Woodward and his wife. They're like your closest friends.
Well, they are. I mean, they have been so wonderful. You know, but Bob was like a son to Ben. I mean, and vice versa. I mean, they adored each other, and Elsa is my closest friend, and we, you know, they have been so incredible to me and Quinn since Ben died. You know, they really are part of our family. They did a wonderful interview with me at the Smithsonian about my book, and they've been incredibly supportive. But, you know, the thing about the book is that I came to this conclusion. I had started out an atheist because my father was in World War II and had liberated Dachau, the German concentration camp, and took pictures of all these dead bodies, piles of bodies, and emaciated people, and he made a scrapbook, and I found it when I was four, and I went to him, and he explained what the Nazis had done, and I said, Daddy, did God know about this? And he said, yes, and I said, how could that have happened? How could he have let this happen? And he said, well, God works in mysterious ways, and I was devastated. I cried all night long, and I thought, all I could think about was those little Jewish children and their parents who were being gassed in these concentration camps, and they were praying to the same God I was. And so how could there be a God? I mean, why would the God... protect me. And so I stopped believing in God. I became an atheist then. And so it's taken me, this book is a series of stories throughout my life of moments of illumination and moments of clarity and experiences that I had that brought me along, like little breadcrumbs all the way up to Ben's death, which made me realize that I was, in fact, not an atheist, but a deeply spiritual person. And then toward the end, I wrote the prologue and the epilogue after I wrote the book, and I had to come up with, I was on deadline, I had to come up with the meaning of life, and I only had 2 months to figure it out. And I finally just realized that, for me, taking care of Quinn, you know, all those years, 16 years, and still now even, was hugely meaningful to me and gave me a reason to live. And then my mother had a stroke and was partially paralyzed and you know, had some brain damage, and I took care of her for 12 years, and then my father got sick. Both parents died in my arms, as did Ben. And what I came to realize is that what gave my life meaning was taking care of the people I loved, and that was the most fulfilling and the most important. It certainly was painful, but the most fulfilling thing that I've ever done. And Ben was part of a study at Harvard called the Grant Study, which they took 4 classes of guys who were sort of superior and wanted to study them to sort of throughout their lives, and they filled out questionnaires every year about their families, their children, their relationships, their jobs, their health, all of that kind of thing. Most of them are dead now, but in any case, the guy who did the study wrote a book, George Valiant, and in the book he came to the conclusion. He said, there is only one way to happiness, and that is love, full stop. And I think that's absolutely true, and I think that so many of us go at it the wrong way. We try to find happiness in order to find meaning, and it should be the other way around. It should be we should look for meaning in our lives in order to find happiness, because the most happy I've ever been is when I've been doing the most meaningful things, which is taking care of the people I love. And that, to me, is magic. And basically what I write in the book is that all religion is magic. And it's all, I mean, faith is whatever you choose it to be. And that's why I don't understand why people are so upset about people who don't believe the same things that they do. Because we all, you know, the word agnostic doesn't mean anything to me, because it says you don't know. And we're all agnostics in a way. So is the Pope. We don't know, but we have our beliefs and our faith and different things. And I think everybody has a different word for God. And for me, that word is magic, because I believe that there's something bigger than we are. And I've felt it. I've felt a sense of the transcendent, and I've felt a connection to the divine in my life so many times that I think that there has to be something. My little human mind can't wrap my mind around the idea that there was first nothing and then something, you know. I believe in a creator. I don't know whether it's it or he or she or whatever. I think it's too much for us to understand, but I do feel that there is something bigger than we are, and I've felt the presence of that something, and it's been incredibly meaningful for me in my life, especially as I get older.
And our guest is Sally Quinn. This is Bob Rovner. And Sally Quinn, I have to share with you that my producer, so it's a small world, my producer Hannah, her mother, believe it or not, is a survivor of Dachau, where your dad,
kidding.
And it's a miracle that she survived, but it's a bigger miracle that today she's 95 years old. She'll be 96 in a week or two, and she met her husband, who lost his family. He was in Auschwitz, and they were gassed, as his kids, his wife. So when he went to Dachau, he gave her some extra potatoes. He worked in the kitchen, and they married, and they had one child who was born in Germany after the war. So when you talk about Dachau, it's a lot of meaning. And you said it's the year of Ben Bradley. Well, then it's going to be the year of Sally Quinn also, because Ben Bradley and Sally Quinn are synonymous, I think.
Well, I hope you will tell your producer to wish her a happy birthday. And that's a wonderful story that she survived. And there are so many survivors. And you know, Viktor Frankl wrote a book. He was in the concentration camp, and it was called A Man's Search for Meaning. And I think that it gives us. I think that one of the things that some of us don't realize on a day-to-day basis is that there's magic out there for all of us. And, I mean, sometimes we just don't see it because we're not looking for it or because we're too busy or too stressed or too whatever, and that we don't stop and think, oh, my God, isn't that a wonderful moment? Isn't that magic? You know, isn't that fantastic? And that it's all there for us. And I don't care who you are. And, you know, you look at some of when I traveled around the world, some of the poorest people living in the most terrible conditions were really happy because they had faith. And they believed in something that was bigger than they were. And it doesn't mean, I mean, I have many friends who are atheists. But in the end, you know, that probably 1% or 2% of the people who are atheists really don't believe in anything. But then if I say to them, you know, what did you feel when you had a child, the birth of your child? They'll always say, well, I felt this was just an incredible transcendent moment or whatever. I mean, and it's there for all of us.
And Sally, you touched every parent when you said you never felt the love that you felt when you had your child, Quinn, and the love you have for Quinn.
Yes. Well, I mean, Quinn is the love of my life. I mean, and was Ben's too. I mean, and Ben was, everybody wanted Ben's approval. And he always told Quinn that he admired Quinn more than anybody he ever had ever met, because Quinn was so resilient and so optimistic given all of his problems. He always went to special schools all his life, and he's always had tutors and helpers and assistants, and he is just really happy, really optimistic. You know, he's kind, he's generous. He's just got it. He's like Ben. You know, he just has this wonderful spirit about him. I mean, Ben was a magical person, and so is Quinn. And I think that, you know, Quinn gets a lot of that from his father. And I said to Quinn, you know, isn't it amazing that you are the one person that Ben Bradley admired more than anybody when everybody wanted Ben's admiration? And Ben adored him. And I think that that's one of the reasons why he's the way he is today. I mean, he's just a really happy person.
Sally, Quinn in Washington can't be the same today. I mean, we have a president that, you know, people think he lies sometimes, and it's, we thank God for the Washington Post. What do you think of the fact that the Grahams sold the Washington Post to the owner of Amazon? And how's it doing, do you think?
Well, I mean, I think it's been fantastic because Jeff Bezos has poured a lot of money into the paper. We've hired enormous numbers of reporters. I think the Post is doing a fantastic job. I mean, the New York Times is really doing a fabulous job too. And I mean, it's really interesting because there's always been this competition between the Post and the Times, and there still is. But it's the kind of thing where we're all in this together because we have all been labeled enemies of the people by the President of the United States. And one of the things that Ben couldn't stand was lying. It made him absolutely crazy. And there's a giant wall in the Post newsroom, and on it are these huge letters, and it's a quote from Ben, and it says, "The truth, no matter how bad, is never as dangerous as a lie in the long run." And I think that the fact that Donald Trump lies about everything all the time has just been an extraordinary thing to watch. And, you know, one of the things when I introduced the film, the documentary on Ben the other night, I said, you know, the fact is, the message of this film, and I think what Ben would want everybody to know, is that that it is the lie is the enemy of the people and not the journalists who expose it. And I think that's the most important thing to remember.
We need a free press, and we need people with money to hire these investigative reporters so we can. How about the expose the Post has today? Roy Moore, as a young assistant DA, went after these young women. So maybe they'll get a Democratic senator in Alabama.
They will be. I mean, you know, the Democrats had a pretty big sweep this last week, and I think it's always so ironic when these things happen to people who are the most, quote, religious, unquote, and the most moral, unquote. I mean, here's a guy who wouldn't remove the Ten Commandments from state property, and yet he's been accused of basically molesting a 14-year-old child. Where are the morals of these people? I mean, it really brings into question a lot of issues about morals and values and ethics in this country. And when they talk about cleaning up the swamp, you just sort of wonder, what did Donald Trump mean when he said drain the swamp? Because it seems to me that we are basically drowning in quicksand a year after he's been in. I mean, it's the day after day after day of somebody in his, I mean, people in his administration, you know, using private planes to fly everywhere, and Wilbur Ross, you know, basically is Secretary of Commerce, who now is, who claimed to be a billionaire.
And partners with the Russians when Trump says.
The Russians.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, it's just, it's day after day after day of some new revelation of some of these people. And look at how many people have had to leave the administration already in 1 year. And how many, and so suddenly people are being indicted, and Flynn, I think General Flynn is next. And so you wonder what clean up the swamp, drain the swamp means. That's a big question that I think we all have to answer. And I think that also we have to look at the idea of what we want as a country and who we are. And is this person, you know, who attacks the mayor of Puerto Rico after a hurricane and goes down and throws paper towels at the crowd. I mean, you know, you have to wonder, and this is a person who attacks a disabled person and who attacks the families of of the fallen. I think that we're better than that. I think that this country, we are decent people. I think we are people of values and morals and ethics, and I really do think that, you know, people need to ask themselves questions when they see the way Donald Trump behaves, the tweets, the insults, and the lies. Do they look at themselves and say, would I do that? Would I behave that way? Do they look at themselves and say, would I tell my children that it's okay to behave that way? And so many of his supporters are Christians, evangelical Christians. I think 80% of evangelicals went for Trump.
And it's shocking that
here's
a guy.
Do they look at themselves and then right. say, well, would they say, what would Jesus do? You know, WWJD, what would Jesus do? Would Jesus behave the way Trump does? And I think the answer in all three cases is no.
Right. He didn't go around groping women and bragging about it. And I know, Sally, I know firsthand Trump brags he has all this money. I'm a pretty good lawyer, and I used to be a state senator. So when Trump saw me being friendly with Ed Rendell one day, he says to me, I need you to be my lawyer. So I said, okay, and here's my fee. He says, no problem. You know what? I did a great job for him. He never paid me. He never he said, send the bill to this hotel, the Trump Plaza. President of the hotel called me. He says, I can't pay it. Trump will get mad at me. Then Trump, I called Trump. He said, well, send it to the Convention Bureau. I have three hotels. The bottom line is he did me some favors. He used to give me rooms in the Plaza. He used to hire, I went out with Barbara Streisand's sister, Rosalind Kind, and he hired her for his hotels as a favor to me, but he never paid the bill. So that's the kind of person we have. You don't know if he's telling the truth. Now, before I let you go, I have to ask you about, you talked in the book about you had Teresa Heinz and John Heinz, the U.S. Senator from mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, who was a great man. I think he would have been president had he lived and not got killed in that plane crash in 1991. So tell me about your relationship with the Heinzes over and your relationship with the Bidens, because I know you love Jill and Joe Biden as well.
Yeah. Well, I've known Teresa since I was in college, because all of my close friends went to Geneva, and that's where Teresa was a student at the University of Geneva on their junior year abroad from Smith College. And so they met her, and then she met Johnny Heinz in Geneva, And then she came back with him to the United States, and they got married. So they were all really close friends. So that's when I met her. So that's got to be, I hate to even say how many years ago that is, but at least 50 years. And so I knew Johnny Heinz was they were very close friends of ours. And Johnny and Ben, they took a trip to South America together and to study the environment. And Johnny Heinz played tennis with us. And we actually were at their house for dinner the night I went into labor. And I was actually in labor sitting at their seated dinner with a bunch of senators. And then went from there to the hospital. So we go way back. And then I had met John Kerry separately. And he had, you know, when he came back from Vietnam, he sort of, and turned against the war, he sort of galvanized, you know, an entire generation to be against the war. And so then after Johnny Heinz was killed and they got married, we continued to be friends with them.
Oh, that's great, because Teresa Heinz is probably the only woman ever to be married to two U.S. senators from two different parties.
Right, I know, that's true, yeah.
And the
Bidens are fabulous. I met Joe Biden when just a few weeks after he had been elected. I think he was 30, something like that, as senator, and it was a few weeks before his the automobile accident, which
a sad accident that his wife and one of his children were killed.
Daughter, yeah, were
right.
killed.
I had
so
dinner.
I've known Joe for, you know, those many years as well.
I was with Chris Matthews last week. He used to be one of my constituents. He lived in Philadelphia.
Right.
He said to me, he thinks Joe Biden wants to run for president in 2020. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I think he's, you know, he's a great public servant. I think he's a fabulous guy. I think he's out there. You know, he's still a voice for good and for reason. But I think by the time it comes around and he's 78, he may decide, you know, he and Jill are doing such great work with cancer. I think he may decide to stick with that. But we'll see. You know, it's too early to tell these days what's going to happen.
Right. This is Bob Rovner. I want to thank Sally Quinn for writing this book. And I know you know the importance of books because you said in the book how you bought the house in Washington with the proceeds from your first book after you were the first female anchor.
Right.
So
yeah.
Is that the house you still live in now?
No, we sold that. And we live in a house. That was a very small house. And after we had Quinn, we didn't have a guest room. So we bought another house. We live in Georgetown now. And I'm also selling the house that we had for 40 years in East Hampton. It was a famous house called Gray Gardens, where the Beals, Big Edie and Little Edie, Jackie Kennedy's cousins, lived. And I renovated that, Ben and I renovated that house. And there have been two documentaries and one a documentary, a feature film, and a Broadway musical about it. And I've just sold it about a month ago, and I'm about to close on it. We're going to have an estate sale this coming weekend, the 17th, 18th, and 19th. And so there's a lot of, for me, this fall has been a lot of letting go, you know, sort of bringing back a lot about Ben, which has been very emotional. It's been a really emotional time for me. But I'm moving on, working on another novel. I will do another memoir, the Washington, Inside Washington memoir, which I will do next, and continue to do work for the Washington Post and living my life.
Well, any book you have on, we want to sell the books for you, so we want to get you on. We'll be in touch with you, but I just wish you the best, and good luck to Quinn, you know, I'm a fan. And I'm going to watch both movies, the one on HBO.
Oh,
and
you should. The documentary is fabulous, and so is the movie. Both of them are fabulous.
Very good, and I just one last story. When you talk, you talked about when Ben was going to get an award from the White House, even though he had dementia, he woke up and said, "Let's go to the White House." But you said, "No, it's not going to be for a little while." So that, but then he went to the White House, got his award.
Well, yes, I mean, because Jay Carney was Obama's press secretary and called me and said, "We're going to give Ben the Medal of Freedom, and then I put Ben on the phone, and he said, you know, we don't want to announce it for another couple of weeks, so please don't say a word to anybody. And that night we had a dinner party, and Ben got up and announced that he was getting the Medal of Freedom because he forgot that he wasn't supposed to say anything. And that was in August, and he wasn't getting the medal until November. And almost every night he would get, it's called sundowning when you have dementia, you don't know what time it is. He would get up about 3 in the morning, and he would start getting dressed. And I'd say, what are you doing? And he'd say, I've got to get dressed because I've got to go to the White House and get my medal. And I'd say, it's not tonight, you know, it's coming. And then, but he pulled it together that day. I have to say, he really rallied, and he knew exactly what was happening. And Ben and I had been at odds with Bill Clinton because I'd written things after the Monica episode that he didn't like. But that day, he and Ben were getting the medal together, and they were in alphabetical order. He came right behind Ben, and so I asked him if he would help Ben get up the red carpet and get up the stairs and sit in the right seat and get up when he was supposed to get his medal. And Clinton was fabulous and really took care of Ben and made sure that he did everything right and had him on his arm and literally brought him back down on his arm. Right. And that was a wonderful moment.
Like Ben, Clinton has charisma. So,
yep.
And he's enthusiastic. And one last thing, because my next guest is going to be the Democrat state chairman of Pennsylvania, and he goes to Washington a lot. I learned from your talking with Charlie Rose, you love Cafe Milano, a great Italian restaurant in Washington. Is that right?
Yes. And not only that, but tonight is their 25th anniversary party at Cafe Milano. And it's been one of our favorite hangouts for the last 25 years. And the owner, Franco Nuschesi, is a fabulous guy. And, you know, it's just a wonderful place. It's a great Italian food and very nice atmosphere. And you know, you always run into your friends there. It's a wonderful restaurant.
Well, you have a great time tonight. I know on October 24th you talked about that. And
And Charlie's going to be there tonight, too.
Well, he's great. I love Charlie Rose. He, I know you, let's see, you and Quinn were on his show one time, isn't that right?
Yeah, we were on his show, and I'm going to be on his show again in a couple of weeks talking about the documentary, The Newspaper Man.
Great.
And,
well, I'm going to watch that. I love, as I say, at 12 o'clock, it's on 12 o'clock here, so it's too late for me, but I tape it, and then I'll watch it the next day. And I'm going to, I watched the October 24th, I'll watch you again. And the last question I guess I'm going to ask, because you said Kay Graham used to have all the heads of states, and she said you could have the fun people, the journalists,
right.
And tell me that story.
Well, Kay, you know, Kay entertained all the time, and she was kind of the grand dame, the great hostess of Washington, and, you know, but she had enormous clout because she was also the owner of the Post, and so she would always have the important parties. I mean, when a new president would come into town, Kay would always have them for dinner, and she would always have heads of state and foreign ministers and, you know, all of these sort of big deals, and we went to all of her parties. And then we would have, so Kay said to me once, you know, it's just a wonderful combination we have, because I have all of the serious people, the dignitaries, and you and Ben have all the fun people.
I think it's great. So, and if you didn't see the new LBJ, Rob Reinhart's movie, it's pretty good, I think.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
You're going
but
to
I love Rob. Rob is great. I mean, he is such a talent.
Right. I had author Betty Boyd Caroli. She wrote about Lady Bird and Lyndon. So I'm going to replay her interview just like I'm going to replay this interview many times.
Good.
So thanks, Sally Quinn. Listen, have a great time tonight. I'm jealous. I wish I was going to be in Washington, but I'm going to go to the Milan. I'm going to go to that restaurant. Think of you.
Okay.
Thank you, Sally Quinn. Thanks for being with us, and good luck in writing the next couple books. And
we
want you to come on when you do. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Thanks. Okay, Sally Quinn. This is Bob Rovner. We're so honored that all of you join us every Friday, every Sunday morning, and repeated many times during the week. And as I told you, Marcel Groen, who's now on the executive committee of the Democrat National Committee, just got elected when they went to Las Vegas, He has to be celebrating, so I asked him to come on because, you know, the four people got elected for Superior Court. The Democrats won 3 out of 4. He won many counties, Bucks County and Delaware County, where Democrats never won before. But Marcel, you tell the story, take it away, and let's talk about the election this past Tuesday. Marcel Groen, thank, and you know, I was with last night Abe Rich from your firm. We had a Bonds for Israel dinner, so he says hello to you.
No, thanks. Good afternoon. How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, so look, it was a good day, obviously, on Election Day. We were happy with the results statewide. We would have liked to have won the Supreme Court race with Duane Woodruff, but that was a hard one because she'd been sitting, Sally Money's been sitting on the bench for a year and a half, et cetera. We won 3 out of 4 Superior races, court races, and 1 out of 2 Commonwealth Court races. So the balance, especially in the Superior Court, is a lot better now than it was. We still have a ways to go. But in all of the races that we worked on, that we were interested in winning, we did really well throughout the state. We won in Erie, both the mayor and the county exec. We won in Lackawanna. We got a Democratic DA, believe it or not, for the first time in 50 years. In the Lehigh Valley, we won the chief executive, both in Lehigh and Northampton County, and we won council seats, especially in Northampton County. But where things really have changed and where it's transformative, this was a transformative election because we broke through in both Delaware County and Chester County, and we also, for the first time in 30 years, did in Bucks County. And in Montgomery County, quite frankly, we swept almost every municipal race imaginable, which was unbelievable. So I'll take them one at a time, if that's okay with you, Bob. Delaware County is a home rule county and therefore is governed by 5 councilmen at large. That was done about 30 or 40 years ago. Since that happened, we had never won one of the council seats. The result of that is that we'd had no say in what was going on in Delaware County government. We won 2 seats this particular time. There were only 2 seats up. And we won all of the row offices that we ran in. As well. The only seat that we didn't win was a judgeship, and that was by very little. And we won a lot of municipalities, and we did really well. So the Delaware County Republican machine has always been very famous and tough to deal with. We think that, but we have the registration advantage, and we do well in state and federal elections. So we think this is a final breakthrough where we can go on to big things in Delaware County.
Right, so that's sort of after Watergate, there was Democrat landslide. That's what this was like.
Yeah, I mean, you and I both remember, but you and I were both running for office. I think you were more successful, at least in the beginning, than I was. But I ran for the state house in 1972 in Lower Bucks, and I lost by 3,400 votes, and I led the ticket by 3,000. Because Richard Nixon had won by 6,400 in that seat. The next year, all of those municipalities that I ran in turned over and became Democratic as a reaction to Watergate and Nixon. And to some degree, I think that certainly, at least in the suburbs, made a huge difference. Not necessarily in much of the rest of the state, I must say. So in Chester County, for example, they had never won a row office or a commissioner race other than the ones mandated by law. They had 4 row offices that were up. They swept all 4 of them, and they swept them with significant numbers. They won by at least 7,000 votes, which was remarkable. And they also won a number of municipalities that we'd never won before, school boards, etc. So that was exciting. In Bucks, we... you know, as you remember, you and I remember, that Bucks used to actually have a Democratic registration edge in the early 70s. And they had county commissioners that Democratic majorities for 12 years out of 24 between 1959 and 1983. But since that time, they've done nothing. And this time around, they had 5 row offices up, and they won 4 of them. The only one they didn't win was the district attorney. And right. They also won a lot of municipal races. And finally, in Montgomery, we ran, there was a Republican that had been appointed as a common police court judge, Joe Walsh, and we ran Jeff Saltz against him, and we won that seat by 26,000 votes. Just remarkable.
And Saltz is going to be a great judge. He's a Harvard Law graduate, good low-key, yep. Brilliant man, and I know he's going to be good. And here's my question. Someone said they okayed a new judge for Montgomery County. Does that mean Judge Walsh will be able to get
well,
that?
Well, they actually legislated, I think, for two new judges.
Right.
So that will... I believe that will probably not be appointed, that will be elected, and I'm guessing in 2 years. It makes the most sense. So we'll see what happens. It is not technically a vacancy because it's a new seat. If it was a new seat, they could appoint by through the Senate. I'm not 100% sure of that, but we'll see how that plays out.
Oh, so they're going to have two new judges in Montgomery County. How about, are there going to be new judges in any other counties, do you know?
Well, there's a Republican judge who won in Delaware County. I'm not sure about the others.
Right, I think for Montgomery County, it's warranted because the fact that they have 800,000 people now, it's such a growing community, it's good that they have more judges. Last week, the president judge pointed out on the show that Philadelphia has over 100 judges with only twice as many people. In other words, 100 judges, where Montgomery County, I think, only had 22. So now, as you say, they'll have 24.
I'm very proud of the judges and what we've managed to do in Montgomery County. In 2009, there were 22 judges, 21 white males and one white female, and they were good people, but we wanted to change the bench then the way it looked. With our victory this year, with Wendy Rothstein, who's one of my law partners, out of the
right, congratulations
judges,
to Wendy. I know she did the impossible. She ran as a Democrat and a Republican and won in both elections in the primary, so she, along with Jeff Saltz, got elected.
Yeah, but we now have 10 women on the bench in Montgomery County out of 22. We have three African-American judges, one of whom is also a woman. I believe that it is important that the bench looks like the people that it's judging, and we've managed to do that in a very short period of time, so I'm really proud of that.
Our guest is Marcel Groen. He is a partner at Fox Rothschild. He's proud to say it's one of the top 100 law firms in the United States. And more so, as county chairman of Montgomery County, made it from a strong Republican county to a strong Democrat county. And he did such a good job that the Democrats throughout the Commonwealth, all 67 counties, elected him as state chairman. And Marcel, over the years, has been one of my favorite guests. You know, I've been doing the show for 30 years. So Marcel, I try to put him on once a year to talk about what the Democrats used to be, what the Democrats of Montgomery County are doing, because they were coming back and becoming the majority. Now it's what the Democrats in the Commonwealth are doing. So, you know, it's a shame. Jeff Moulton, he was a great candidate for Superior Court, a great judge. So hopefully eventually they could put him back on some court, because he's the only one that lost for Superior Court. So I'm sure you'll...
And you're right. Jeff was a very good judge. He was supported by the governor. He served there for a year and a half. He did a phenomenal job, and that's the one major regret. And Dwayne Woodruff, who ran for the Supreme Court and who, as you probably remember, was an all-pro Steelers cornerback and MVP and put himself through law school while he was playing football.
Great man. He sat right here. I wanted to do a phone interview, but just like you came in when we had PCN here, he wanted to come into the studio. So he came in, he let me wear his Super Bowl ring for a minute. And he, like you said, he was a Pittsburgh Steeler when he went to law school. Then he was a great, not only was he captain of the team, he was a wonderful lawyer. He got elected. He's been on the Common Pleas Court in Pittsburgh, has a wonderful family. And I think the fact that Sally Mundy, because her husband had been a trial lawyer, he got them to go for Sally Mundy, and that was the only reason that
that took a lot of money that out of what normally would go to Democratic candidates. But you move on, and like you said, we did well in this cycle. We have a lot to do next year, and ultimately, look, I won't rest until we have a president that I can be proud of.
Exactly, and that's Sally Quinn was our last guest, and you know her. She was married to Ben Bradley of who hired Woodward and Bernstein, who did the making of the president. Everyone is so upset with Trump, and I think it's going to come out. So it's pretty good that the Democrats kept Virginia. And it's great that they now got the governor of Virginia, the governor of New Jersey, starting in January. And what did you think of Donna Brazile's comments? Because she had been chairman and she had written a book. So I don't know if you made any comments about that.
No, I didn't. Right. But look, I understand that the comments came out right before an election. They could have hurt us. I think... I understand sometimes I think about writing a book, and in doing so, I realize that if I write it honestly, there'll be some people that will be unhappy with it, assuming that anybody ever actually wants to read it. I was disappointed in her, quite frankly. I think it's fashionable right now to throw Hillary under the bus. I think that's a shame. She's a good person. She ran at tough times, and we'll never really know how much all of those fake stories and those hacking things that Trump and WikiLeaks and Russia did. But I think they had a cumulative effect, far more than people realize. So I was disappointed in what she wrote.
Right, and this is Bob Rovner. My guest is the Democrat state chairman. What do you think of... the fact that one of the candidates for governor dropped out, he's going to run for lieutenant governor with the Republicans, with Wagner, and that way. So tell us about their ticket, and then tell us. But we have Casey, who's been a great U.S. senator, so you may want to talk about 2018, because this election's over. We're going to have another election in 2018. So talk about Wolf and talk about Casey. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, Boris, I think it is... was running for the U.S. Senate and realized that he was probably not going to win. So rather than running for that, he decided he wants to run for the lieutenant governor. That's his business. I don't have any comment about it. He's going to be running with Scott Wagner. And Wagner used to boast before Tuesday that he was Trump before Trump was Trump. And certainly that seems to be the way he is. And look, I think the governor's had a very, very difficult time in a situation that where he has a legislature that is unwilling to help him in any way. Obviously, it took 4 months or 5 months to get the revenue straightened out just on a budget. The governor is a good man, and he has, notwithstanding all of that, has done really good things, and he's restored a lot of the money for education and for kindergarten education and things of that sort. That has always been the priority for him. And I think we'll be okay with that. On the Senate side, it's going to be likely Barletta against Senator Casey. And you're right in the button. I mean, Bob Casey, and for that matter, Tom Wolf, but Bob Casey is about as decent a human being as I've ever been involved in this political process. He is the real thing. And the good thing is that I believe that at least out of Southeast Pennsylvania, we will roll up huge numbers. I think that's what Tuesday really shows us. In the rest of the state, other than some other places like Allegheny, Lehigh Valley, and the Scranton area maybe, we will have a more difficult time. But I do believe that in 2018, their likelihood is that there will be more votes coming out of the Southeast, especially, but in other areas that we're good at. And I'm really optimistic about it. I think we need to be smart. We need to be on target. And above all, I think we need to come up with solutions to problems that make common, that are just commonsensical. I just want to give you an example, and I'm not running for anything, but if you don't mind, I was talking to my counterpart committee person in Abington, who was a good guy, a businessman and big Trump supporter. And I said to him, you know, you've got this ballot question, which is just nonsensical, where you can replace the school tax, 100% of the school tax, if you're a school board, if you want to. And I said, it's nonsensical because there's no way you can make up the money that you're getting rid of. You can't increase the sales tax. You can't increase your income tax unless they legislate, and they're not going to do that. So it doesn't make any sense. On the other hand, the whole issue of real estate taxes for schools is a major issue and a major problem. And it punishes residential communities and rewards commercial and industrial communities. Because in residential communities, you got a lot more students, obviously, and you don't have the base. So Cheltenham is a perfect example. And on top of that, you get a lot more tax-free communities because they have churches and all of those synagogues and all of those kinds of things. He says, what would you do? I said, if I were the king of the world, I would have the taxes collected by the county and then sent out on a per student basis, going back to the school board, to the students, to the school boards, to equalize things. Now, I know that would be controversial because for some, they like it just the way it is, but that's the right thing to do.
Right. And did they have an amendment that passed this election about?
Yeah, they passed it, but they can't do it. You know, right now you could do it with 50% of real estate taxes, you know, and you can get rid of them in return for something. No school board's done it. So it's just one of those political things that doesn't do anything. And I think we need to start being smart, and I think we need to be honest with the electorate. We don't have to always kind of try to put our finger in the air, see what they want us to do, and come up with common sense solutions. I think people will like that.
Right. Our guest is Marcel Groen, Democrat state chairman. So tell us, you took Casey to Israel. You have a great passion for the state of Israel. Your parents are both survivors of the Holocaust. So I know you love Casey because he's a strong supporter of the state of Israel. Isn't that right?
Yeah, when he came in, you know, that was one of my best trips. And there were 15 of us with Senator and his wife, Therese. And when he came back, he said, I want to be a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee, and I want to be head of the Middle East Committee. And that's what he did.
Marcel Groen, I thank you. Keep up the good work. I thank you and congratulations on a great victory all over the Commonwealth this past Tuesday. And we elected Krasner, we elected Reinhardt in Philadelphia. So thanks to everyone for listening to Sally Quinn and Marcel Groen.